Yesterday, actor Denzel Washington released this statement, "God bless Reuben Carter and his tireless fight to ensure justice for all." In the 1999 film Hurricane, Washington portrayed the middleweight boxer who lost his bout with cancer Sunday at the age of 76, and decades ago was wrongly convicted in a New Jersey court, not just once, but twice, of murdering three people.
I was a prize fight. My job was to take all the hatred and skill that I could muster and send a man to his destruction. And I did that. But Reuben Hurricane Carter is no murderer.
We're also being reminded today of Bob Dylan's 1975 song Hurricane, which told the story of Carter's first conviction and a jail sentence, even though witnesses to the triple murder said it wasn't him. And he and John Artis, a friend who was with him that night, passed lie detector tests.
Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but what?
The song became a hit, Reuben Carter a celebrity. The case against him overturned when witnesses recanted. Carter and Artis were briefly freed and then tried and convicted again by the same prosecutors who now said they'd committed racial revenge, killing three whites in retribution for the death of another black man. Back to jail they went, and away went most of their new friends, except for reporter Selwyn Robb of the New York Times, fellow fighter Muhammad Ali, and musician Tom Kidron, who wrote a song for Hurricane Carter 2 years before Bob Dylan did.
He fought his way to fame, known as a hurricane, declared an act of war against injustice that he saw.
Tom Kidron lobbied relentlessly for Reuben Carter, who admitted that as a kid he'd been filled with rage, that he served time once for assaulting a man. But in 1985, a federal judge ruled he'd been wrongly convicted in the 1966 murders, citing prosecutorial misconduct. Tom Kidron is now CEO of the internet 3D company World Online. He joins us in the studio, and condolences, because this was a personal loss for you.
Thank you very much.
What drew you to him when so many had turned away?
Well, I think Reuben had many strong characteristics. Certainly his power of presence. He did have a very strong aura about him, physically strong, but more importantly, I think the energy that he put out, a tremendous smile, a tremendous intellect, a great quick wit. But Reuben also had a human compassion, a component that could tie into your heart. And I think the combination of the injustice that was done to him, his ability to suffer through that, and certainly when all people turned their back on him, which was striking because everybody believed the system was corrupt and unjust, and how could the same system retry him and not but find the same verdict? But that was sufficient enough for people to say, well, he must be guilty because he had his second trial.
Well, and as it turned out, and as a New York Times investigation continued to show, the system was that bad, that it was that bad twice.
Correct. Much of the system was based upon promotion for achieving this tremendous conviction against, at that point, the biggest murder in New Jersey history. So that system was throughout corrupt.
Well, and you, I know you're going to balk at this because you're here to talk about Reuben Carter, and I can see in your face that that's what you want to do. But it has been pointed out, Howard Manley wrote a column in the Boston Sunday Globe in the year 2000 when the film came out, pointing out that when just about everyone went away, you did not. You know, in the film, you'll see him in his cell reading all sorts of books on philosophy. Where did he get those books?
Well, I brought them to him. Reuben would use joke to me and say, I'm your big experiment, aren't I? And I said, look, the fact of the matter is that no matter how many books on law you read, you are not going to free yourself. The system has to work its way through. But you have to be free within your mind and expand your mind through more esoteric type of reading. And we had long debates about that. And ultimately, he started to read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, Surviving Concentration Camps, Viktor Ouspensky. And we had these long, many, many hours of conversations about that. And I could see in his demeanor, he became less strident in his speaking style, very philosophical. He started to melt. The angry person that felt that he was truly unjustly charged and had a sole purpose of vindicating himself through the legal system realized that he had to get above that.
Well, and what's he been doing in the decades since? He's fallen off the radar for a lot of people. We know he co-founded a group in Canada that was sort of the Canadian version of the Innocence Project. Had he been successful?
Well, he had worked very long and hard and felt that the gift that he had been given through his celebrity and his own cause had provided him with a platform to speak out against others that were unjustly charged and wrongly convicted. He worked with another group to free inmates that were unjustly charged and wrongly convicted, and eventually left them and formed Innocence International. And Innocence International now will be a program at Tufts University with the Reuben Hurricane Carter John Artis Innocence International program at Tufts University, which is where his papers will be archived, and it'll be a proactive program for students to work with those that are wrongly convicted.
And John Artis, again, the man who was in the car with him that night, who was arrested with him, but also eventually cleared, wrongly convicted.
And was with him the night he died.
Well, tell us about that. USA Today was reporting that the woman who co-founded the Innocence International Project with him, or at least was involved in recent years, Wim Rahr, visited Reuben Carter in his last days. He was incommunicative. He couldn't speak with her, but she says she told him that she'd just returned from an Innocence Project meeting in Oregon. The Innocence Project is the U.S. version of the same idea. About 113 exonerees were there at this meeting in Oregon, and they all signed posters thanking him for his work. So within that community, and it's a very large community now of people who've been exonerated, he was certainly well known.
He was recognized worldwide. He was asked to speak at many lectures around the world on this behalf. He was pointed in not wanting to use his history other than as an example, but more to focus on those cases that he felt merited his ability to bring the spotlight to them.
You've been in touch with him. In fact, you had a voice message on your phone, and we asked you to play it back. Let's just listen to a little.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, Reuben? I'm here waiting for you. How you doing, brother? What's up? You on a trip somewhere? Were you out of the country, out of the world? Tell me, where are you? Just calling, brother, to touch down and see how you doing. I'm all right for the moment. But give me a call. You get an opportunity. Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Awfully upbeat for someone who's staring at a fatal illness and had this history of losing such a portion of his life already. What was your sense of Reuben Carter in the last days, last months?
He was lucid. He was not giving up the fight. He said, look, I know death is coming for me, but I'm ready to go. I've done what I could do. I've met who I wanted to meet. I've said what I had to say. And I've had a great life. And it's been heaven for the last 28 years.
Did he feel he made a difference?
I think he strongly felt that he made some mark, and that if anything, he would hope that his legacy would be that people would remember him for speaking out for those that were wrongly convicted.
Tom Kidron, on the death of his friend Reuben Carter, Hurricane Reuben Carter. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.